when you're running your own business at the end of the day, I don't care whether you're a $100 million business or you're doing $100,000, your revenue has to be more than your expenses.
My name is Esprit Devorah, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy. I am so grateful. It is a Sunday afternoon in Los Angeles, and I have the privilege of having Chaco, co-founder of Farmbox, a company that I have been a customer of for a really long time. It was recently acquired by Grub Market. She's incredible. Her co-founder and she created a company they feel passionate about. They utilize technology to serve more people. It's a Farmbox delivery company, and they even reach out to match with local artisans and have the most high quality food delivered to your door at an amazingly reasonable price. I mean, you can't even call it reasonable. It's just super affordable. It blows my mind how they make it accessible to eat well and enjoy your food. Welcome, Chaco.
Thank you.
So, Chaco, tell me a little bit about yourself today. Go ahead and introduce yourself, your company, the role you play in your company. I know it's a little confusing because you were just acquired.
A lot has happened this year. Yeah. So my name is Chaco Fairbanks, and I'm one of the co-founders of Farmbox. We were acquired by Grub Market, so now technically my new title is VP of Operations.
How did you become that title, actually? How do you transition? How do you discover that after an acquisition? Who decides that?
You know, I decided it with the CEO. So we just came up with it together on what my responsibilities were gonna be.
That's exciting, right?
Yeah.
I think that's exciting. I mean, I don't know. It's the first time I'm hearing
this. It's funny. It's the first time I've had a job since I was 20.
So, that's insane.
Because I've always just had my own company. So it's definitely, it's a little different, but it is fun to have, you know, a title that way.
I think it's such an explorative process to really identify, you know, as a lot of people on their business cards or whatever it is have the term founder or co-founder. I actually have on mine VP of communications, even though I'm the creator of my company, because I'm like, what does founder mean? Like what I actually do deals with communication. So I'm going to do that on top of that. And I think you'll appreciate this. I was like, and if my company ever fails, at least I've had a job. Okay, so you said that you've had multiple companies since you were 20. Let's dive in to the beginning, and then we'll get to where we are today.
Oh, man, that could be a long story.
I am excited. we'll jump over what needs to be jumped over, but I'm really excited. So when did you first discover technology?
Well, the first project I did that had technology was so funny. So we did a hair straightening product that we were advertising on TV. And we were just
You were advertising it on TV?
Yeah, like we shot like the 30-minute infomercial, you know.
How did you even figure that out?
No, this one I didn't own, though. This one I did as that was the job.
Oh, okay,
I was 20,
got it.
Or 21.
It. Yeah.
So it was just so funny. And then that was, you know, we were like, oh my gosh, 20% of the sales are coming from the internet. You know, it's like, wow, that's so much. And so that was like the first tech-ish experience I had. And then so after that, but it was really cool. It was so awesome to like produce the show, put it on TV, and just immediately, you know, be able to test it and see the sales come in and play with the analytics. And so the next, we decided to do it again. And so we did a skincare line with Paula Abdul.
But this was your own company at this point?
It was. So this was my own company at 24. So it was right after American Idol. And so we got Paula Abdul to be our spokesperson.
Wait. First of all, what just happened? Yeah. How do you know about skincare?
You research, you learn.
I mean, but why
even
skincare?
I dived in and said, I'm going to do, you know, I don't know why skincare now. It's been a long time.
But
we were going to do skincare. We wanted to do an anti-aging skincare line.
And how did you attract Paula Abdul? Like, Did you have to pay a lot of money for that?
It definitely was expensive to have her be our spokesperson.
Did you have funding?
We used our own money. So my business partner actually put in the money
cool.
for that project.
All right. Yeah. Cool. And have you always had business partners in each one of your companies?
I have. I have always had a business partner. It's so much more fun doing it with at least two. It's just than doing it alone.
And you don't mean two co-founders. You mean two people.
Sorry. Yeah. Yes. It's with two people.
And have you had a good business partner experience in every single company?
I have, actually. I've really lucked out. I don't have, you know, don't get me wrong. There are times when it gets difficult. I mean, you end up spending more time with that person than anybody else. So there definitely are times where you might have differences, but I think I have lucked out overall.
That's so awesome. And we'll get into that, like the kind of things that you look for when selecting or deciding to be someone's co-founder. But jumping back, Paula Abdul. So what happened there?
Well, it was, it was my first company. And I'm going to be honest, it did not work. Like, it was hard. I spent a couple of years, and I had skincare. I had like 25,000 units of skincare cream that haunted me for the next 10 years. But I think what I learned the most about that is, you know, you got to fail sometimes, and your failures are your biggest teachers. And I learned so much from that I was able to take with me to my next project so that I didn't make those same mistakes again.
And what were some of the lessons that you took with you?
Number one, really understanding your analytics. Like knowing how your business is doing. And also, it's about having lifetime customers. I would say that was a huge thing I learned, is with that skincare line, I think it would have done great had I stuck with it. But I was only looking to acquire the customer. And I wasn't saying, like, how can I make this customer happy forever?
Right.
And that's where I missed out.
I love that. I love companies that ask themselves, how can I form a lifelong relationship with the customer? And that's exactly what I feel about your company today. But before we get to that, so after Paula Abdul Company, right. what was your company after that?
What was next?
How many companies have you had in total?
I think seven.
Do you have the same thing as me? I don't count some of the companies. They did like so bad that I'm just like, let's just forget
about
that.
Some are just like ideas.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that was just an idea I tried for a little bit.
Yeah. Like I remember when I used to have an electronics company and I would buy pallets of electronics. Like, I don't count
one. Right.
You know what I mean?
Just exploring a crazy idea.
I had a bed sheets company. I'm like, no, that doesn't really count. Yeah. So you learned about online retail. And you created your skincare line. Mm-hmm. And then what were some other companies that really, really were meaningful to you until you got to your company you got today?
I did a fitness. It was basically boot camp in a box. And so it was all online. So we'd ship you like a boot camp kit in a box. But what was really cool is we had created this online service for it so that you could go online and also like track your diet and track your workouts and get extra classes and things like that. So that one was really fun. And that at that point had been like the most tech I had ever done. One thing really good I learned in that was that you cannot be the expert in everything.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't know how to build a platform that could track your workouts and your calories and your meals. So I didn't. I went and found someone who had created something really awesome, and then I licensed it. So
That's awesome. And
I did that with maybe three or four other tech companies where they were doing something I couldn't do. So I knew I could bring sort of the video and do the workouts, but I couldn't do the rest. But you can just license it.
How did you learn about licensing? How did you even learn that that was an option?
You know, I think when you have your own business, you just know you need something and you are just relentless until you find it. I didn't just know, oh, well, I'm going to license. I just knew, like, oh, I want to have this. It's so awesome. And then you just are relentless and you go find. I mean, I went and found the person who developed it in Los Angeles.
That's
like, now, I need to have this.
Now, with your fitness in a box, did you have funding with that one?
No, but at that point, our companies had made money, so we just used our own money.
How soon after your fitness in a box company was created did you become profitable?
You know, I would say within like 6 months we were profitable, but it was in 2008. So it was really interesting. We had We were doing great, and Target ordered 7 containers of boot camp.
How did they find you?
Well, we were doing advertising on TV, so we had done. We were doing great.
By this point, you were like a TV infomercial master.
we had done a lot of TV marketing.
Did you learn about that TV marketing from your company before?
Yes, but from my first, from the job.
Oh, from your job, your job as well. Yeah.
And then, and my partner was great.
Right.
He was super experienced.
Awesome.
A ton of like several years of experience. So we had like the 7 containers on the water, headed to Target, and then the market crashed and they canceled the order. And that's a lot of money for a small business.
Oh,
I mean, it was
my
like,
God.
I don't know, $500,000 worth of product on the water.
No.
And I'm, you know, 28 years old or something. So,
no way.
But it is, and this is where it's like your failures and your challenges are what makes you smarter. And, you know, where some people see a wall, I mean, that Circuit City went out of business that year, like it was crazy, right?
Yeah.
It was a crazy time. But it really forced us to think outside of the box. And we were on, man, that year we went on QVC. We were selling boot camp at like on army bases.
That's
like
crazy.
We sold a container to the Philippines, one to New Zealand. I mean, we were like, anyone who would we would sell it.
Two things. One, how'd you get on QVC?
I think it was through my business partner who had a lot more experience in that industry. But
are you able to say who your business partner was at the time?
Oh, his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, his name was Bill Floor.
And what was his background? Like, how did you guys meet?
So we had met on the first project I did when I was 20.
Oh.
So he was actually, so we, he was my ex-husband. Also.
Oh, wow.
To get just the full, this is
throwing
this is like
it in.
Therapy with a spree.
This is so funny.
Women in tech and therapy.
So funny.
Yeah, no, but he was, I mean, he was great. He had a ton of experience, and I couldn't have asked for a better teacher.
That's amazing. So you have this order. I just want to kind of like repeat it for you guys because it's so intense. You have this order from Target and you're like, yes, the order is prepared, being shipped to you. And they're like, oops, sorry, not going to give you money anymore. And you're like, ah,
yeah,
right?
Basically,
pretty much
freaking out.
And then you're like, hustle mode. I can't just sit there and we have to sell it. So let me just get on the ground running.
Yeah, it was either give up and file bankruptcy or figure it out. So it didn't happen overnight, but we stuck with it for a year. And mind you, we didn't make as much money as we had hoped we would, obviously.
Right.
I mean, it was like, I think nobody made as much money as they hoped they would during that time. But we figured it out. And in the end, we didn't lose. So
it's incredible. I love that you're emphasizing how sometimes you just need to figure out the hustle and just make things happen, even when you don't even know what that first step is.
Right.
You're just like, whatever. It will come to me in the shower. And then what was your company after that?
So after that, we did after that, I was running marketing campaigns for other companies. And that was great. Super fun doing that. And then after that, I co-founded Farmbox.
Awesome. Before we get into Farmbox, what would you say your calling is through and through all these companies? Like, what's that one core competency that you're like, this is what I'm meant to be doing with my life?
You know what I love doing is creating. I really do. I love having that idea and then figuring out like how you get from concept to full-blown operations.
Yeah.
Like, I think that if you were to say, like, what's my strong skill set?
Right.
It is, like, building the company and thinking through, like, all the operations.
You know what's interesting about that is that it seems like if you know how to grow a company from the start, it doesn't necessarily mean you know how to grow a company once the company succeeded and is bigger. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a certain amount, like, oh, I can handle growing a company up to 15 employees or up to 30 employees. But then when you get past that, it's like, I don't know how to manage a company that's bigger. Would you say that's a specialty of yours, that you both know how to grow a company that's just a newbie company as well as one that's a bit bigger?
I've taken my previous companies probably up to about $20 million in sales. And then I always either, you know, moved on to the next or sold the company. It's not my specialty, I would say, taking a company from like 20 to 100 million.
Right.
But I'm also not saying I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah.
I just always end up flipping it.
No, totally. So. I mean, my gut is that you have the rare ability that you would be able to do it. But I think most people in the startup founder role aren't necessarily able to do it, which is why investors want to place a CEO or some other executive talent when it gets to that level, because that founder, that may not be their core competency.
Right. Anymore. It makes sense. I think entrepreneurs turn into like entrepreneur junkies, to tell you the truth. Like there is that exciting adrenaline of, like I said, taking something from like concept and then seeing it launch and then growing it really fast.
Totally. And so Farmbox, I keep delaying the conversation of the hour. So Farmbox was recently acquired by Grub Market. You created it in 2010, and then 6 years later, it was acquired, which is really exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And so kind of walk me through the journey of Farmbox.
My business partner was working with farmers, it was such a struggle. So we decided to partner together to really help farmers sell their produce. And we created these fun modern CSA boxes. So you could subscribe to a box and get all your fresh fruits and veggies directly from the farm to your door.
Some people may not know what CSA is.
Oh, so they're, it stands for Community Supported Agriculture, but it's a box of freshly harvested fruits and vegetables.
And by the way, her co-founder is an amazing female business owner.
Yeah,
as
Risha
well.
Freiser. She's great. And so we started out with these boxes, but we wanted to make them cooler. So we did. They're totally customizable. And then we did things like paleo boxes and juicing boxes and meat boxes and things like that. And we started to see also that local artisans were having a hard time with the distribution and the marketing. And it was just, it's hard to start a food business. So we started partnering with them as well as a way to help them sell their products and get their products into people's homes.
One thing that we were talking about earlier is in meeting your co-founder, you guys' visions were aligned. And so when it came to the time to decide if you were okay with the acquisition, you guys were already on the same page. And you were going after both investors or not even looking really to be acquired at that point, but you were open to it. So walk me through what happened there.
Yeah, it's definitely easier to have that talk at the beginning than when you're right. in the midst of it.
Yeah.
Like we knew from the very beginning that we were going to be able to take it so far with no investment money, right? So we wanted to start it regardless right. if we had investor money or not. We were going to start that business. So, and then at a certain point, we knew we'd either have to get investors or we wanted to be acquired by another company that was aligned in our goals.
And the other thing that you're in, I mean, not forever, but as forever as your company goes, right. is being a co-founder. And you've had the best experience with your co-founders, as have I, and that's rare. So it's something that I really want to address. What do you look for, or what do they look for, both, in matching with someone else growing a business together?
Sure. So I always look for passionate people. To me, that matters. The why you're doing it really matters. And again, this is me. Like, I don't yeah. want a partner who just wants to make money no matter what the cost.
Right.
Like, why we're doing it and how we're doing it, to me, really matters. And Risha, who was my business partner at Farmbox, really is, like, the nicest person in the world. So we were very like-minded that way. And also knowing your exit strategy. You don't want one person starting the business who thinks they're going to pass it on to their children or their grandchildren, and you want to exit in 2 years.
Totally.
So it's important that you be definitely aligned in that. And then the last part is really the expectation of who's doing what. That's really important. You don't want to start a business and then a year in, someone's like, you know what? I want to go and, I don't know, spend the summer yeah. in Europe yeah. or something. So if,
you're speaking my language.
You know, I mean, hopefully it's a company where you can do yeah. that. Like, that's the dream company
no,
for sure.
100%.
But you want to just make sure, like, I have a business right now apart from this. Like, it's one where I'm just an investor in it. Like, I have a bed and breakfast in Utah, and it was very, like, my business partner is awesome, but it was very, like, laid out straight in the beginning. Like, mm-hmm. I would invest, he would run the company, that's the expectation, yeah. and so far, so good.
I think that's amazing advice, because I think people get so excited about their idea and so excited to find somebody that they want to build together initially, and then as the hard times get hard, that's when communication really comes into play. So laying out your expectations right at the beginning really mitigates having any discrepancies moving forward. Mm-hmm. I know one thing that I look for in my business partners that's been huge has been integrity. And I could tell by how you're talking, same. Some days are really horrendous being an owner of a company, and you have really difficult decisions to make. And some days, I don't know if you've experienced this, but some days you may not like each other, but you respect one another. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you – have you had that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And I think it's important, like, in those times that are difficult, as long as you always have the same goal. Like,
yeah.
Like, for us, we might have a huge problem at work and a very – like, a challenge that we need to figure out. But it was never about arguing, like – what I wanted
right.
or what she wanted. It's really interesting. It was never about that. It was always about what is best for the company.
Right.
And I think that's what made it so that we never took it personal. Because it
right.
wasn't, I didn't care if it was my idea or her idea. What I cared about is it was just good for the company.
Yeah. I think that's so important. How do you overcome challenges?
Wine.
Great answer.
No, I think, like I said, always staying goal focused and not taking it personal. As soon as people start taking it personal, like, it's really tough.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But building a company is very personal. So how do you separate the two?
You know, for us, like, I'm trying to think, like, with Risha and building Farmbox, It was really always, I mean, every week it was just goal oriented of looking at, well, how did we do? How could we do better? And then we would quickly make a decision and move on.
Right.
We would just move, like, make the choice and move on.
Yeah. I learned that in my second company, a sports company. I was telling someone the other day, I wanted to create, like, a democracy in my company. So I let, like, the whole team decide together. And what I discovered is they wanted me to just be a leader and be decisive. Mm-hmm. And it was hard to respect. I had the most genuine motive. Don't we all, if we all make decisions together. But they felt like if there's no one just being decisive, making that core decision that they're possibly contributing feedback to, then it's just kind of like no one's steering the ship.
Right.
And, yeah, it's hard. I think that's. Now I just push myself regularly, like, just decide. Decide anything. Even if it's wrong, just decide something.
Yeah, because you need to be agile.
Yeah.
Before. Like, what's that book? The Lean In book where she talks about
the posters
they have up on Facebook. And then it says, like, done is better than perfect.
Yeah.
Like, you got to make a choice and move on.
100%. 100%. Matt, who is our fabulous unicorn editor of the show, we were just talking about this weekend about what does perfect mean? And I was like, we don't need perfect.
I said,
we just need to be the best we can be.
Yeah.
That's what, you know. Mm-hmm. But that took a long time to get to. Did that take a long time for you to get to as well? Like, I used to aim for perfect. And obviously be 100% disappointed.
Yeah, I think, you know, what's fun with my last businesses is they moved so fast that you couldn't want perfection because everything happened in, like, 2-week increments.
Really?
So,
oh my gosh. Right. Yeah, I've been striving for perfect, and finally I just accepted, like, okay, Esprit, if you ever want peace of mind, you got to let that one go. Yeah. Was there ever a point in your, I guess, career? I know you've been primarily entrepreneurial, but ever a point in your career path where you're like, whoa, I'm heading in the wrong direction? I mean, maybe that's when you were 20 and you wanted to pivot and change and go into a new
path. It was right before Farmbox. I always felt really passionate about the products I was doing, but at the end of the day, they were products that I was just selling.
Right.
You know, it was stuff.
Right.
At the end of the day, I was selling stuff.
Right.
And I wanted to do something that I felt really good about, that it wasn't just a great product, but that it was good for the community, it was good for the earth, and I was giving back. And that, so I spent about, I don't know, maybe 6 months trying to figure out what was going to be next. And that's when I met Risha and was like, yep, this is exactly it.
That's so cool. How did you go from idea to, you had 60 employees right before your acquisition, to now you're in a whole different place. You've rebranded as Grub Market, so it's all one thing. But how did you go? I mean, that's a really big deal to go from idea to 60. How did you do that, and how long did that take?
Sure. It took us about, I mean, we spent the first year really working out, like, logistics and what was the everything, packaging, product, all of that. And you know, when you're running your own business, at the end of the day, I don't care whether you're a $100 million business or you're doing $100,000, your revenue has to be more than your expenses.
Right.
So we only grew and brought on more employees as we could afford them. That was definitely key for us surviving, since we didn't have investors. Like, we knew we had to self-sustain. But we were relentless. I mean, we were at like every networking event, every marketing opportunity, and we grew. And as we could afford a bigger team, we got them. And as we could afford more infrastructure, we got it.
How were you able to like kick it off and then to even incrementally grow in the beginning? Like, that's really daunting to some new entrepreneurs.
Well, I think for Risha and I, we were lucky because we both had previous businesses. So I'm not saying just anybody could do that.
Right.
So we had previous businesses. So we were okay using, number one, our own money to start the new business. And number two, living without a salary. So we were lucky that way.
Right.
You know, I think the average person starting out, if they don't have that, they are going to have to raise money. But it's something like 80% of the startups out there do not get traditional investors. Right. They are using credit cards or savings or getting angel, friends and families. So you don't need to go out there and raise $1 million to start a company. It's awesome. And if you can, high five. That's fantastic. But it doesn't need to stop you. So you can start a company with a smaller amount of money.
100%. I mean, my sports company, before I raised money, I raised credit cards. I maxed out every single one of my, and my credit score is like shot to hell.
don't do that though.
but I would do it all over again. Like, I mean, I would do it all over again.
Really cool resources now too, though, because there's there's the Kickstarter, I'm trying to think of the other one right now where it connects you with investors.
Yeah, AngelList.
Yes, and then there's another one too. Circle Up is a great place as well. So there's a lot of great places you can go just for that initial seed money where you can prove your business. And then I think at that point is when you can go back and say, okay, now I'm ready for the million.
Totally.
Now I'm ready for the five.
And there's a ton of great accelerator programs from Y Combinator, Amplify. Right. There's so many great startup resources that simply just didn't exist years ago.
Right.
Like, or it wasn't as known as it is today. Startup culture has become this phenomenon worldwide. And so it's really exciting. What is the number one thing you've learned about how to achieve your dream? Like, what's the best lesson? You're like, oh, this is it.
Remembering that you are running a business. So staying, I'd mentioned earlier, like, your revenues need to be more than your expenses. Like, at the end, like, you got to use QuickBooks. This is
You can't just have
a dream and spend money and think revenue is going to come in. You got to know where every single cent is coming in from and where it's going to.
Yeah.
So there are, you got to know the fundamentals of running a business. Like, so definitely watch it. Watch the analytics of your customers, what's happening that way. But definitely you got to be on it, on every single penny, knowing what's happening. Because it's so easy to wake up one day and say, oh my God, where did all my money go?
How can people stay in touch with you?
People can find me on LinkedIn. So it's Chako, Chako, Fairbanks.
Awesome. Thank you so much for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast.
All right, thank you, Esprit.
You're awesome. If you guys want to connect further with other incredible women in tech, just head over to our Women in Tech Facebook. That's womenintechvip.com. Just go over to womenintechvip.com and that will take you to our Facebook. You guys, this is Esprit Devora, and I will talk to you guys, see you guys, hear you guys in the next episode.
This episode of the Women in Tech Show is powered by UpGuard. UpGuard's discovery engine brings visibility to complex IT environments, enabling teams to quickly identify risk, confirm compliance, and make business safer. They are proud supporters and employers of incredible women in tech. To be notified every time a new Women in Tech episode is released, simply text Women in Tech to 310-872-2423. That's 310-872-2423. To support the Women in Tech Show, it's super easy. All you need to do is start doing your Amazon shopping by clicking on this link first, womenintechshow.com/Amazon. That's womenintechshow.com/Amazon. The Women in Tech Show is hosted by Esprit Devora, edited by MKW Films, show notes provided by Carl Marty, music by Jay Huffman Live. The Women in Tech Show is a WeAreTech.fm production.